Ever feel like you're in a rut? I've felt like that before. I felt like that when I was 10 years old. Life was kind of a cycle. You get up, you go to school, you come home, you do your homework, you eat dinner, watch a little TV. On the weekend, you might watch a little sports, go to church, eat a roast on Sunday night, watch this favorite TV show. Like back then for me, many years ago, it was the $6 Million Man. You guys don't know about that. And then Monday morning, you wake up and you do the same thing. Repeat it all over again. Life was kind of like a cycle, like a rut. Maybe your rut is on the other side of the pendulum. Instead of the same old, you are on a treadmill and you're on this frenetic pace. Your husband leaves for work very early in the morning. He works a long day. He comes home late. He barely has enough time to spend with you and the children whom you've been with the whole day. And you're on this treadmill in this frantic pace of life, and you don't know how to get off, and you're in a pattern that you need a break from. You're on a rut, and you need a change. Maybe it's a relationship that you're in, and no matter what you try, it seems like the same old over again. And just like the song says, why can't we ever get things right? You end up having the same argument and going to those same areas. Or maybe you end up having the same cold shoulder or silent treatment with one another. And you're in a rut and you need a break. You need something different. You need something fresh. You need a revolution, a change that promises something more than Donald Trump or Barack Obama could promise, to clear out the crusty establishment and clean the swamp. Well, if that's you this morning, if you need a change, if you need something fresh, then our passage will help us this morning. We continue to look at the Gospel of Mark, and Mark describes for us this revolutionary who can bring transformation to our lives. Do you want a change? Do you want a revolution? Do you need something different? Let's look at Mark chapter 2, verses 13 to 28. As we continue to look at the greatest revolutionary of all times, we're picking up in verse 13, and Jesus went out again beside the sea. So we're still in Capernaum, where Jesus healed the paralytic. Last week, Mrs. Randall told us about that. And we're back by the sea, though. And it's interesting how much ministry takes place by the sea in the Gospel of Mark. And our revolutionary is still very popular. All the crowd was coming to him. What was he doing? He was teaching them. Verse 14. And as he passed by, he saw Levi. This is another name for Matthew. He's the son of Alphaeus, and he's sitting at a tax booth. Jesus says to him, "Follow me," and he rose and followed him. This is the second call of discipleship in the Gospel of Mark. But here, in this call, Jesus is reaching out to someone sitting at a tax booth. He is a tax collector. Now, back in the first century, These tax collectors were unpopular. They were not liked by the Jewish citizens. They were despised. They took a tax from people who sold their goods, and they tried to take as much money off the top as they could. So they weren't liked by the people of Judea, of Jerusalem. And so, just to drive this home a little bit more, we're going to use our famous example. Sam, stand up. So Sam's a tax collector. All right, Sam. Now, Nathaniel. Does Nathaniel stand up? Nathaniel is a businessman. What are you selling in Jerusalem, Nathaniel? Lemonade?
Yeah.
iPhones. Okay, first century iPhones. Now, Nathaniel, he's selling first century iPhones, $800. Okay? Now, Sam, he's tax collector. He's going to charge Nathaniel for doing business in Jerusalem. How much are we charging him? $100. Trying to get as much. So people don't like Sam. He's trying to get as much money as he can from people doing business. Furthermore, he's given this money to himself, but also to the Roman government. We don't like the Roman government. I mean, it would be like if North Korea or Iran, you know, conquered America and came over here, and then they started taxing us. So Sam's not only taking money away from Nathaniel, but he's giving it to the Roman government. You know, what if we're giving money to North Korea or Iran? Okay, thank you very much. You guys can sit down. Thank you for your example. All right. So, but Jesus, he called a person just like that. He called the rejected of society to come and follow him and be his disciple. And so, friends, we as a church, do we need to get out of a rut that we're in? If we do, just like the spirit of the revolutionary, let us also recruit the rejected, the despised of society, even the rejected. Recruit even the rejected. Now, who is that for us today? Who are the rejected that we can even recruit them? Okay, look around the room. Anybody you see in here that you would label as hopeless? You know, the dregs of the bottom of the barrel? Okay, I see we're pointing to a few people. Well, you know what? You can recruit even them. And I already told them I'm going to pick on them. I'm going to pick on the sixth graders this morning. Okay, sometimes we may feel, you know, every year we got to do the same thing. We welcome the fifth graders. I gave them a hard time. I gave the sixth graders a hard time. I'm hard on them. I try to, you know. But right here, I keep telling them, this is the present and the future of our church. Right here. Future pastors, missionaries, evangelists at their company, and right now, evangelists at your schools. This is the present and the future. And okay, let's not pick on them. You can look around at the other guys you're putting your fingers at. But if we want to get out of the pattern that we're in, if we need a revolution, we need a change, we can recruit even the rejected. Recruit even the rejected. Now, before we call people to be disciples of Jesus, we have to get to know them, spend time with them, share the gospel with them. And that's what Mark shows us Jesus does as we look into verse 15. Verse 15 tells us Jesus reclined at the table in his house. We're going to Matthew's house, this despised tax collector's house. And many tax collectors and sinners were reclining with Jesus and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. What do people think of Jesus hanging out with the rejected, the despised, the bottom of the barrel, the sinners? This is what the religious establishment thinks. Verse 16, the scribes of the Pharisees, when they saw that he was eating with sinners and tax collectors, and they didn't speak directly to Jesus. They talked to his disciples. Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners? And when Jesus heard it, you know, he kind of heard it through the grapevine here. He said to them, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick, I came. This is part of Jesus' missional statement. I came not to call the righteous, but sinners. So friends, Jesus, in wanting to break his culture out of their rut, he spent time, he recruited even the rejected, and he spent time with sinners, with tax collectors. He spent time with the rejected. And so we too, as we seek to break out of those crusty patterns we've been tracking with, let us also spend time with the rejected. Now, I want to commend you guys. How many of you regularly are spending time? You're eating. You know, eating is a great way to communicate to someone that they are valuable, that they are worthy. How many of you regularly are around the unchurched? People who don't know God, people who don't participate in the community of God. You're either going to school, you're working around it. How many of you are regularly around? Yeah, I think most of you are working, you're around. And so I envy you guys. I mean, you're not like me, you know. I mean, as I've told you before, I get to hang out regularly with Pastor John, Pastor Johnny, Minister Randall, you know, Deaconess Emily, you know, STL member Harry. I mean, these are, you know, buff, spiritually fit people of God. They're healthy, I think, you know. I think they're pretty healthy. And I don't get to be like you guys, hanging out around people who don't know God. So I want to commend you for that. Keep that up. We need to stay connected to the community. And that's the whole illustration, that you need to be around the people who are spiritually sick. And you guys are doing that. So keep that up. Just like, you know, Ed and Debbie and Stephen in the future, they're not going to be seeing, you know, these buff dudes, you know, who are all physically fit like Sam, right? No, when you guys see people, you got to see people like me, you know, got a bum knee, you know, back hurting, aching all over. You got to help me out, all right? And that's what you guys are doing, so keep doing that. But I want to challenge us to extend our borders, maybe to even to those who we might see as rejected or despised or hard to reach. Maybe it's someone who's from a different religious background, perhaps a Muslim background or a Hindu background or a Buddhist background. Maybe it's someone who's a part of the LGBTQ core, and reach out to these folks. This in 10 days from now, we're going to be celebrating Halloween. Or we're not going to be, but the culture is. You know, there's going to be all kinds of people coming to your door. Demons, ghosts, witches. This is an opportunity to connect with the community. Pick up a Halloween packet at the connection desk. It'll give you some good ideas on how to be a Christian and connect with the community. So friends, how can we break out of our rut? How can we get out of the establishment as a church? Clean the swamp? Let's recruit even the rejected. Recruit even the rejected. But let's move on. Verse 18 tells us more about our revolutionary. Verse 18, John's disciples and the Pharisees were fasting. And people came and said to him, now notice, the problem is with the disciples, but they don't talk to the disciples, they talk to Jesus. Why do John's disciples and the disciples of the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast? Jesus says to them, can the wedding guests fast while the bridegroom is with them? As long as they have the bridegroom with them, they cannot fast. The days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and then they will fast in that day. So Jesus' disciples are being criticized for not fasting. However, their criticism is a little off, because what had happened was that the Jews had taken a religious practice such as fasting and had added much more to it than what God had originally ordained. In the Old Testament, there was only one day of fasting that was required. And Leviticus 16 tells us that it was what? The Day of Atonement. Now later on in Zechariah 8:9, we see that there were maybe four extra days of fasting. But by the time that we get to Jesus and the Pharisees, we see in Luke chapter 18 that the Pharisee was out there praying and he was claiming what? God, I thank you that I'm not like this sinner, but I fast twice a week. So the Pharisees had added on much, much more than what the Old Testament had even required or asked. And so Jesus was coming against this. And he answers first, though, by saying, what in the world why should they fast? Because I'm like a bridegroom, and I'm right here with them. And why would you fast when the bridegroom is right there with you? So I did get married, and I was a bridegroom for one day. Now, what kind of wedding invitation would it be? Say, I want you all to come to my wedding. Come celebrate with me, the bridegroom. Bridegrooms back in the Jewish days got a little more attention than they do today. Today it's all on the bride. But in the Jewish culture, the bridegroom actually was celebrated quite a bit. Who in the world would say, come to my wedding. We're going to have a wedding at the Hilton. And in the ballroom. And we're going to fast. How many are you going to come to? Yeah. So Jesus answers and says, there's something new. There's something glorious. There's something fresh. And your old ways, your old crusty patterns, especially as you have added on so much more man-made rules, they are not worthy of this newness, this new glorious that is before you. And he goes on to illustrate this more. And he says in verse, he uses two more analogies. He says, verse 21, no one sews a piece of unshrunk cloth on an old garment. If he does, the patch tears away from it. So I got the oldest garment that I could find. This is about 30 years old. I like to keep all my old stuff. And it does have holes in it. Okay, you can see it got holes all over it. But I still keep it. My wife wants me to throw it away. But now, who would take a new piece of garment and sew it on to the old piece? You wouldn't do it. You know why? Because the new piece hasn't been shrunk yet, and when it gets wet, you wash it and that kind of stuff, then it's going to shrink, and then it's going to take all these tears, all these holes I have, and it's going to pull on it and make the tear even worse. Okay, that's the analogy. So we don't think of adding a new garment to an old garment. And then he uses another analogy, and he says in verse 22, no one puts new wine into old wineskins. Wineskins. We don't put new wine into old wineskins. Why is that? Because if he does, the wine will burst the skins. See, the old wineskins have been stretched because the wine ferments, and then it stretches the wineskin, and then it keeps stretching it to its limit, and so then it becomes brittle, and then if you put new wine into it, it's already been stretched to the limit, and it may burst the brittle old wineskin, then all the wine falls onto the ground, and your wineskin is wasted. So we don't do that. Wine is destroyed, so are the skins. The last phrase in verse 22, but new wine is for fresh wineskins. So Jesus is the bridegroom. He's the new cloth. He's the new wine, and we need a new approach. We need a fresh approach to this glorious, this honor that is among us. Now, what does all this mean, and how does this affect us today? What is the old wineskin? What is the old wineskin that Mark and Jesus are talking about? I offer to you that the old wineskin is legalism, this obsession with man-made created rules that the Jews had crafted. Now, I just want to share three aspects of legalism that I think Jesus was attacking and apply to us today. First, one aspect is when we're adding man-made rules. Okay, the Jews added much more to the fasting than what was required in the Old Testament. A second aspect is we look down on others who don't keep these man-made rules. Now, today, it's hard to say exactly how we might practice legalism. One form might be as we look at how people dress, for example. If, you know, the Bible only talks about dressing with modesty, dressing with respect, but to impose and say that, oh, you must dress like this, this, or that, we have to be a little more careful, okay? But the last is what I want to emphasize. It's this aspect of getting so absorbed in the rules that we then begin to trust in our good works, our good deeds, our righteousness, and in ourselves, and we no longer trust in the bridegroom himself for our restored relationship with God. So friends, are you in a rut in your own spiritual relationship with God? I want to challenge you and exhort you and encourage you to trust in the one, rely on the revolutionary and not your own religious deeds for a restored relationship with God. Now, Jesus was a revolutionary. He wanted to bring them, but he was a revolutionary who wanted to return them to the good old days, to the originalist perspective of God's word. And the Jews had lost that sense. They had lost the sense of God's mercy and his grace, which is in the Old Testament as well, represented by the sacrifices. And as they made up all these extra rules, they began to put a focus on themselves and their own ability to restore their relationship with God instead of relying on God's grace and mercy. A quote by Charles Ryrie tells us that the basis of salvation in every age is the death of Christ, and the requirement of salvation in every age is faith. It's faith outside of ourselves, not in ourselves. And the object of faith in every age is God, but that content of faith changes. They didn't know fully about Jesus in the Old Testament. But it's all by grace and through faith. And so, friends, we see that Mark hasn't told it to us fully here in Mark chapter 2. But by the time we get to the end of Mark, we know the ending of the story, and that it's through relying on this revolutionary, because he died and rose again, that we can have a restored relationship with God. So friends, do you need to get out of the crusty establishment you've been in? Maybe you're trusting in too much of your own good works and your efforts, and you need to rely on the revolutionary for your restored relationship with God. Rely on the revolutionary Jesus. And so our baptismal candidates have gotten this down. They know that if they died and they went to heaven, and God was to ask them, if God were to ask them, why do you have a relationship with me? They would know what to say. Or if they were asked, why should I let you into heaven? And you, every one of us should know the answer to this. So I'm going to ask one of my baptismal candidates, Daniel. Daniel, what would you say if God said, why do you have a relationship with me? Jesus paid it all. That's right. That's right. Thank you. It's not because I fast, because I did all these good works. Gabriel, do you remember Ephesians 2, 8, and 9? Can you say that for us, brother? He's a baptismal candidate. You don't want to say it for us? Okay, well, he knows it. He said it to me yesterday. He knows Ephesians 2, 8, 9, which says, by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, not as a result of works, that any man should boast. Allison, you know it too, right? Don't you, Allison? Okay, very good. All right, so rely on the revolutionary for your restored relationship with God. But let's move to the last point, and verse 23. Verse 23. One Sabbath, he was going through the grain fields, and as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck heads of grain. And the Pharisees were saying to him, look, here we go again. It's the disciples are having a problem, but he didn't talk to them. He talks to Jesus. Pharisees saying to him, look, what are they doing? What is not lawful on the Sabbath? He says to them, have you never read what David did when he was in need and was hungry? He and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar, the high priest, and ate the bread of the presence, which it is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those who were with him. And he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. Again, Jesus' disciples are being criticized because they are breaking one of the greatest rules in the Jewish culture, the Sabbath. Or it appears that they are. So they're being questioned. They're being criticized. What is Jesus' response? We don't see this here in Mark so much, but I would like to bring this in. The first response that I would say is that they may not have been violating the Sabbath. If you look back at Deuteronomy 23 and 25, it shows there that there may be some exceptions for picking grain out of hunger, even on the Sabbath, okay? The second response, and we see this here in Mark, is that there are times when there's a higher law. Now, we don't even know if this would be considered work, what the disciples were doing. But even if it was considered work, there can be a higher law. And he uses David as an example to show of when there might be a higher law. David, he ate bread that only priests were supposed to eat, but it was because of the higher law of feeding his hunger. It might be similar today that keeping the speed limit. I do encourage you to keep the speed limit, to drive under 35 miles an hour or 40 miles an hour. However, there are times where you would drive over 35 or 40. For example, if you have a medical emergency, that's okay. And so Jesus uses this as an example to say that there's a higher law, and even going back to the spirit of the law, which he talks about at the end, that the whole purpose and spirit behind it was to protect man. The rules of the Sabbath were for the blessing and benefit of man. It was to protect them from overworking, from resting, as well as to celebrate their covenant relationship with God. And so, because the Sabbath is for man, and I'm the creator of all men, then I get to call the shots, not you Pharisees, on what is best for the blessing of man. I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. I'm the Lord of all mankind. And so, friends, as we look back, because see, the Pharisees, they had added much, much more again to the Sabbath. They went way beyond what the Old Testament required, because they wanted to make sure so much that they didn't cross that line, that they added on all these other elements to make sure that they didn't violate the Sabbath. And they said things like, you know, whoever takes up any burden to carry it out of his tent. And then they had to define, okay, what is a burden? And they added on things like, okay, going on a journey, tilling a farm, lighting a fire, riding a beast, traveling by the ship, striking or killing anything, slaughtering a beast, animal, all of these things they were adding on, and they were making up these rules again because they thought they knew what was best for man. But Jesus comes down and he says, no, I made the android. I know what is best for man. I get to call the shots. I've shown you by my authority all the way up until now that I'm the Son of God. I'm the Son of Man. I call the shots. So, friends, how do we get out of the rut we're in? Recruit even the rejected. Rely on the revolutionary for restored relationship. And rely on the revolutionary for a growing relationship with God. He knows what is best for us. So, as we've seen in the past, as we come to Christ, we not only come to him and rely on Jesus for being declared righteous and having forgiveness of sins, but we depend on him to grow in that righteousness and in our relationship with God. And so, friends, are you struggling with an area in your life, maybe with bitterness, maybe with lust? Rely on the Spirit, the Holy Spirit of the revolutionary, to bring about growth. Maybe you're overwhelmed with your schedule. This last week, I didn't know what to do. I had a sermon to prepare for. I had a missions conference at the end of the year to prepare for. I had a small group to prepare for. I had a Sunday school to prepare for. I had baptismal candidates to encourage. I had long-range planning at the church to help out with. I had parents who needed my care and help. And I just said, Lord, I can't do it. I can't do it on my own. And I had to write a little sticky note and said, God, I need your power. God, I need your power. So I want to encourage you. Would you do that this week? And I got it right there on my whiteboard. And every time I just feel overwhelmed with, I can't do this on my own, I look at that sticky note. It's pasted on my whiteboard. I say, God, I need your power. And will you do that this week? Will you go out and write on a sticky note and stick it on your book or stick it on your office and just say, God, I need your power. Anytime you're feeling overwhelmed, like you can't do it all on your own, then you look at that sticky note. Well, friends, this morning we've talked about how to break free from the establishment that we've been in. And we've said that we can do so as we recruit even the rejected and we rely on the revolutionary for restored and growing relationship with God. You see, Middle Earth, it was in a stalemate. It was in a rut. The forces of darkness and the forces of good were battling each other for centuries. Men, elves, and dwarves were in a stalemate with the Dark Lord Sauron. Until one day, the men, elves, and dwarves decided that they would call and recruit some new heroes, some unsung heroes. They were called the most unlikely of heroes. They were called hobbits. They were big in foot, small in stature, but big in heart. And one of those hobbits had a power outside of himself that gave him extra natural abilities. It was in a ring. And as a result of the new fellowship that they had and the new power that they had, they were able to dethrone and defeat the Dark Lord and bring themselves out of the rut and the impasse that Middle Earth was in for so many centuries. Well, friends, do we need to get out of the rut that we're in? Do we need to break free of the establishment? Let us recruit, not hobbits, but let us recruit even the rejected. And let us rely not on some ring for power, but on the revolutionary himself. Rely on him for your restored relationship. Rely on him for your growing relationship. Let's pray together. Lord, thank you for the great revolutionary Jesus who really was returning us to the way things ought to be and were in the beginning. Help us, Lord, to allow him and his spirit to fill our lives so that we can be all that you want us to be. We pray in his name, and all the people said,